If you are someone who's looking to learn more about fertility awareness method for natural birth control or conception, and you're ready to finally get to the root of hormone imbalances for good, this is the podcast for you. The cool thing is, Fertility Awareness Method is here for you in all seasons of your life. When you're looking to prevent pregnancy, when you're ready to conceive, and when you want to use it postpartum. So if you're in the phase of your life where you are looking for a natural form of birth control without all the hormones, head on over to my free training, nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining, for all of the information. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into this new episode.
It's not just about periods. That's great. We should know about that, but it's what it signifies, what it says about the society, and what it says about menstruating people's access to not just period products. Period products is a proxy for access to a dignity in life.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to a new episode of the Healing Hormones Podcast. I'm Nina Boyce, your host, certified fertility awareness educator, and the creator of Luna Reclaim Your Cycle, which is my online fertility awareness method course and 3-month membership. And today I have a really powerful, powerful conversation for you with a Dr. Tricia Collender, who has 15 years of experience promoting equity, policy, and behavioral change in a variety of contexts, but most recently at Thinks Incorporated as the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we are going to have a conversation about period equity, what that is, why it's important, why menstruators of all kinds deserve the resources to period products, and how, when this is not the case, and there are so many reasons why it's not the case, and we're going to go through this within the podcast episode, but why this is more than just a period issue, why this is truly a women's rights issue, a menstruator's issue, and why when we don't have access to these basic, basic things, biological functions in our body, it really holds us back from so many things within life as far as work and school and making strides and moves within society. When we feel that we do not have access to period products, or, you know, we're being taxed more on period products. We talk about what the pink tax is in this episode. I mean, there are so many things that my mind was just trying to wrap my head around. Being in the hormone, fertility, and menstruating space for years now, I didn't even make some of these connections on why period equity is such an important topic and why we really need to create policy change around it for future generations of menstruators and current. So I cannot wait for you to dive into this episode with Dr. Tricia. Tricia has also built, directed, and executed the Addressing Inequalities Network Alliance, the AINA, which is the largest and most successful online consultation in the United Nations history, featuring 6,000 member participants in 100-plus countries in Asia, Africa, Latin America, Middle East, the former Soviet Union, and the United States, that culminated in equity targets and goals interwoven in each of the UN Sustainable Developmental Goals. She also, prior to Thinks, was the lead for the United Nations at the anti-racism and DEI lead of NGO CSW to the UN and the global coordinator for the UN Women Generation Equality Forum. So she knows what she's talking about. And I was so, so incredibly grateful to have her on this podcast. Just a little bit more about her education. She's earned a PhD in sociology from Columbia University in 2013. She also studied at the University of Cambridge in the UK and Yale University. And she is currently studying at a business school in Paris towards her MBA and will graduate in November 2022. So if we were going to have this conversation on period equity, diversity, and inclusion, Dr. Tricia is the person to talk to, and I cannot wait for you guys to learn from her in this episode. So let's go ahead and hop right in. So I have Tricia here, who is the head of diversity, equity, and inclusion for Thinks, which is a period underwear plus many more other things company. And I cannot wait to chat with you about many different topics today, but we're definitely going to be focusing in on period equity and inclusion and how Thinks is doing a really great job at bringing that mission into their company. So thank you so much for being here
today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Yay. So question, how did you get started working for Thinks? And tell us a little bit about your background.
I have always been interested in equity of some kind. So by training, I'm a sociologist. And I had been working in the international development field for a long time on a variety of issues. I mean, my doctoral dissertation was on refugee protection, nothing to do with period pants at all. And as a result of doing that work, you realize that no matter what the issue is, it could be something as simple as, you know, a food access. Even if there's food insecurity, if a man has it, a woman has it that much. Mm-hmm. Like there was literally nothing that I was touching that was not influenced by gender. So obviously I morphed into gender. I started working. I had previously worked with UNICEF, started working with UN Women, and then got involved in what was then called the Action Coalitions, which was a huge undertaking to push gender equity around the world. But there were all of these subcategories, and one of them was reproductive rights and health. And I saw where menstrual equity was actually one of the tenets or the pillars. And I thought, that's very interesting. So I started working on that, at least in an ancillary way. And then alongside that, around the time of the George Floyd murder, every company was taking a good look at themselves. And even the UN, I think, had always looked at colonialism and feminism and every type of ism except racism. But finally, they were sort of forced to deal with it because they were behind the eighth ball with respect to civil society. And so I had been, bringing it up for many years. And they said, okay, well, why don't you do anti-racism and see, you know, how it works? We're going to do this for one of our big conferences and you can lead the entire strand. Mm. It was very successful, kept doing it. And then I realized in order to change the world, I need to be in it and not discussing it from the side. Mm. And I wanted to find a company that was aligned to that mission, but still, you know, firmly with a foot in the real world. And I looked, I found Thinks, and here I am.
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah. And so much good work has needed to come from what you are doing. I know that even in my situation with the podcast, it was like a huge awareness for me. Like, am I being inclusive in this podcast? Am I talking about all of the things that I need to be talking about or interviewing all of the people that I need to be interviewing? And so, yeah, I'm so thankful that one, you're doing this interview with us here. And we talked a little bit about like the word like period equity. What does that even mean? Like, what's the definition?
Well, usually,
behind
period equity, menstrual equity, six of one, half dozen of the other. It's more than just access to period products. It's about the quality of life of a person who is menstruating. So you have people that don't have those, and that affects everything. It affects whether or not you go to school. It affects the kind of experience you're having in school and how you want to take care of your menstrual health. You've lost that choice. So the reality is the access to period products, really, it's part and parcel of how you work, how you study, how you move through life with basic dignity. That's really what it is. So it's not so much just the biological function, it's what it entails and what it means for your past, present, and future. And so it thinks, we believe all people deserve equal access to this. Mm. It is, it's a company, primarily women work there, it's run by a woman. And so this is something that is really in the DNA of the organization. And without access to these products, we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing as a society. So that's something that we really are pushing. Yeah. And we recognize that free or at least affordable and easy access to period products is really an essential part of building an equitable society. People usually don't make that link, but that link is really there.
Oh my goodness. I shared this on the podcast before, but I was walking down the street. I live in the city. I'm in Columbus, downtown Columbus. And I was walking down the street and I realized that one of the women, she was bleeding through her pants. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have anything on me. I didn't even know how to address it. And I was thinking to myself, like, oh my gosh, this specific woman probably does not have access to these products right now. And it was the first moment in my mind where I really made that connection of like, I've never even had to think about that for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I was growing up, I remember just being like, mom, do I wear pads or tampons? And she went to the store and bought me them. But I didn't, it's not until you visually see like, wow, there, or, you know, we've all probably had this experience where we go to the bathroom and we're out at a restaurant and all of a sudden it's like, oh shoot, my period started. And you go to the bathroom and there's nothing in there for you. So you have to like ask around to find a tampon or a pad. I mean, these are things that are normal biological things that are happening every month to our body. And some of us don't have access to anything to
deal with that. And in addition, you've
got
cultural stigma. of periods as well. If they're unclean, something's wrong with you, it's dirty.
Right.
And really, a period is a sign of health. If you're not having one and you're of the age to have a period and you're not having one, that would indicate poor health. So there's a there's an irony in this already. And so this is really something that we want to push because we feel this is an area that we can really be successful in making that claim because we do this well. I think to your earlier point, there were a lot of organizations that kind of handcuffed, hand-tied, and caught flat-footed when the George Floyd murders happened and didn't, and they thought, okay, we're going to turn into the NAACP. It's like, well, you can't, you sell fans. You know, it's just like, you know, so why don't you work within the space that you are good at? And that's really the approach that we've taken. We care about those things. We support those things. But where can we actually have the most impact? And this is exactly where we can have the impact because we've done this and we do it sustainably. And we disrupted the entire field when we said, okay, we're going to create this thing, because back then it didn't exist, where you don't throw it away, you wash it out, and you're going to be good with the fact that you're going to be handling your own bodily fluids, and it's sanitary, and it's great for you. And by the way, they're really cute too.
I was being somebody in the hormone space for many years. Okay, I talk about periods, cervical mucus all day long. I just tried my first pair of period panties, like, two cycles ago, like what in the world, you know? And I was thinking like, oh, I have to wash this. And like, it was like this weird, how did I even have a disconnect between I put this in the washer with my, like, is that going to be sanitary? Like, of course it is. Like period blood is healthy and sanitary and there's nothing wrong with handling your own bodily fluids. Again, this goes back to education, which is one of my questions. Like there's definitely a lack of education in our schools. And as a FAM educator, it's like, we're just not taught about our bodies. And I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the current state of
in
period
general,
education?
Okay, I'm on a podcast, so I'm going to be really kind about it.
Yeah,
but
that's
in general, there leaves a lot to be desired. To my earlier point, there's still a stigma about what is really a bodily function that is extremely healthy. So I think the main thing, first and foremost, is to minimize the stigma and to shift attitudes around it to the kind of conversation that we're having now. We're talking about this like we're talking about hair, and that's really as fraught as it should be. We did the State of the Period report, and what we found was that students, in almost every case, were like, we'd like to know more. We need more access to this. So it's not that there is a lack of an audience for this. And it's just, there's a huge disconnect between what students want and need to learn and what we're actually providing. I mean, I remember back in my day, it was like, they'd hand you a book. And I remember this very distinctly. It was a book from 1950. Now, obviously you can see me, I'm much younger than that.
Yeah.
And it was a book from 1950, like, you know, when you have your period, do you, you know, and it was just really antiquated. And then of course, next was advice on how to be a great date for a guy. The two were never actually disaggregated. They were, you know, it was really strange. And I was just like, why are you giving me this? You know, and it took a long time to get past the point. I will even admit myself, when I first saw menstrual equity and something I was going to be working on, I was like, I don't know, you know, and I've been a refugee camp. I've done all this stuff, but it's built into the society to be ashamed of it. So I think the very first thing, we need to have more open conversations about this. And most students think that they need it. So why aren't we providing it? 77% of students that were surveyed for our report believe that they need more in-depth education about periods.
Exactly.
That's a huge number.
Oh my
God.
That's
a massive number.
Well, can I just tell you, as somebody that is teaching fertility awareness method, and most of my clients, I would say, are between the age of 25 and 35, really, it's like the bulk of them. The amount of times I hear these grown women say, I can't believe I never knew this about my body, or I can't believe I didn't know what cervical mucus was, or I can't believe I didn't know that this was a healthy period and this was not a healthy period. Wow. Like every single one, myself included, when I started studying this, it's just wild that we crave this information. So why aren't we being taught? And I'm sure you were about to riff on that more, but man, it just blows my mind.
I mean, the way I approach this, I mean, ultimately I'm a sociologist, right? So I'm always looking for an undercurrent, whether or not they actually exist, but in most cases they do. In this particular case, they do. So, okay, here's a stat that should should frighten you. Mm. According to the Sexual Information and Education Council of the United States, only 32 states and DC mandate sex education.
Wow.
And 13 states do not require sex education or HIV, STI education to be any of the following: age appropriate, medically accurate, culturally responsive, or evidence-based or evidence-informed.
I got goosebumps kind of out of anger just from hearing that.
I'm not going to bore your listeners with a huge number of stats, but I think that these are illustrative that it's not just our own internal messaging that we've kept and held on to, and we don't even know that we're holding on to this burden. There are all kinds of things, tacit and explicit, that reinforce the fact that this is not a thing. Yes. And it's not a thing you should be interested in. However, to my earlier point, 77% of students are interested in it. So unless that disconnect is brought closer, that delta is closed, we're going to continue to have the same results we're having now, which is why it's so important for us, I think, to be doing this kind of work and raising this issue.
Mm. How do we make this change then? Because I obviously know that many people that are in positions of power are, you know, white, older men. So like, how do we start to change this? Or like, what can we do to really create, like, this is something that needs to be a part of the education system? Or like, these are words, these are more details about the woman's body that young women deserve to know. So how can we make sure that this is an important concept that is taught mm-hmm. and is going to get into our schools?
Well, I think we keep doing what we're doing now. We do things like your podcast. I mean, like, let's just rewind 15 years. Both of us are older than 15, mm-hmm. so we can do that. Rewind 15 years. This wasn't even a conversation.
That's
now
true.
It's a conversation on the side. So there's been progress. So it's not totally hopeless, but it's not moving as quickly as we would like. And it's not moving as quickly as it should. And we should continue to press and push the envelope to the extent possible. But I think about any kind of quote unquote, risque or controversial topic. How was it generally taught before it became mainstream? It was taught in either an ancillary fashion where there were some sort of alternative schools or some way of getting that information, whether it be a lecture, whatever it is, not mainstream. And then really interesting ways of getting it out there. Everyone's like, oh, put it on Twitter and TikTok. That's pretty standard opera, you know, it'll get lost in the shuffle there. So get a little more creative about it. We'll figure something out. We're used to disrupting things. That's what we do. So there is definitely hope. We just continue to do what we're doing. And where there is crisis, there's opportunity. And there is a crisis here now, believe it or not, at least as of last year. The inequality between people of color and white people in the United States is at the same level it was right before slavery ended.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I would have never even known like that specific fact. Wow.
So that being said, where can we insert ourselves to start to close that? And so this is part of it. I don't know for sure. I could go back and check, but I would probably hazard a guess that the 13 states that don't do sex education are the ones that are probably not doing well overall in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
And draw that link and make that very clear if indeed that link does exist.
Have you been looking for a way to prevent pregnancy naturally and finally ditch birth control or the IUD without fear? If so, I have the perfect free training for you. So my free training is for women who have been thinking about getting off of birth control and they have questions about fertility awareness method. This is the exact step-by-step method that I've used and am certified in to teach you how to identify your fertile and infertile days so that you can choose when to have sex on your terms and avoid pregnancy. So with this method, you are going to learn how to avoid pregnancy without all the added hormones or the IUD, plus how to do it without using a barrier method every single day. Sounds kind of too good to be true, but I promise you, you can do it. So by the end of this 90-minute training, you are going to gain the confidence in transitioning off of birth control so you can finally switch to a natural and non-hormonal method. You'll learn how birth control impacts your hormones and brain so you can begin to fully nourish and support your body. And you'll discover how to avoid the three biggest mistakes women make when they stop birth control and learn how to begin fertility awareness method for 99.6% birth control accuracy. And at the end of the training, you will learn how to get access to my Healing Hormones Library, which is my full library of resources I use with private clients to teach them how to get to the root of hormone imbalance, to fully nourish their body, gut, liver, all of the essentials to support your body post-pill. So if it sounds like this training is for you, go to nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining to get access. Again, that's nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining. We'll also have it linked in the show notes. I can't wait for you to finally gain the confidence to ditch birth control without fear and prevent pregnancy on your own terms. Head to nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining to get started. I mean, I don't doubt it. I have a lot of states in my mind that I'm thinking of. We don't need to go through them, but I don't doubt that at all. Another question. There's something called the pink tax. And I am curious. I mean, I knew a little bit about it and I researched a little bit more, but I wonder if a lot of the listeners, they don't even have an idea of what that is. So can you explain what pink tax is and where's the inequality there?
Okay. So the pink tax is how do I put this gently? It's gender bias pricing, and it upcharges for products that are for women. So for example, it's sort of a luxury tax to make it pink. It's sort of a sarcastic terminology. So for example, I don't know if you're familiar with the whole, I think this got started with an examination of razors, and razors for men cost X and razors for women, they were just pink, but exactly the same structure, exactly the same design, suddenly cost more, things of that nature. So anything that, you know, involves, I guess, quote unquote womanhood, and I use that term very, very loosely, is charged more. So I don't know, it's sort of a luxury tax for being a woman. First of all, we earn less. What luxury are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this doesn't actually make any sense. And then I don't know any menstruating person, man or woman, that would say, oh, having a period is a luxury.
Yeah.
It's like saying, you know, breathing is a luxury. We need it. We're really grateful that it's happening.
Yeah.
But it's not a luxury. It's a bodily function. So why are you being charged more for this? So there are women and men and feminists of all kinds that are leading a movement against that tax on sanitary products and declaring this as a form of regulatory discrimination because it is, you know, and it reinforcing that menstruation is natural. It's uncontrollable. Why are you charging 100%. More people for this? It's essential stuff. You know, it's like toilet paper.
I was just going to say, what are we supposed to do? Like, you know, if you have to go to the bathroom and you go in and there's no toilet paper, there's a problem. So what are we supposed to do?
Even worse, there's another layer to this. There's something called the tampon tax as well, which it refers to the sales tax applied to feminine hygiene products such as pads, liners, cups, tampons, etc. And this tax even extends to all kinds of other problems. So just living as a woman, really basic things cost more while you make less. That's an equity issue.
Yeah.
And so that's why we, along with many other people who've done this before and many other people who will do it after, really push this idea of the pink tax is in and of itself, a signpost of how inequitable and unfair things can be depending on where you sit or stand on the gender totem pole.
And you guys, correct me if I'm wrong, is there a petition going on to like end that pink tax, or there's like a petition going on with you guys? I thought I saw it on the website to end something. Is that period just period equity in general?
General. We believe in really putting our foot down on a bunch of social issues. So it's really, unless you tell me exactly which one you're talking about,
we support a lot of
organizations. Yeah, well, we support organizations that do work for specific things. We ourselves are not, we do not think that we have all of that stuff set, but we certainly have it here.
And I want, when we were talking about how these are resources we just need, like toilet paper or anything else, they're just basic bodily functions. It brought me back to kind of our conversation earlier, where if you don't have access to them, then you're missing out, or women are missing out, or menstruators in general are missing out on school days. They're missing out on work days. They aren't able to show up in society the way that they are supposed to be. And that is just, that's an issue, I mean, on so many different fronts. And so really, like, that's why this conversation like we are having needs to be out there, because I think we need to realize how this is creating such a disservice to so much of humanity. I mean, what's the percentage of us that are menstruating in society? I'm sure
at least 50%.
Exactly. You know? It's half of us, if not a little bit more. So this is so, so important. Okay. So I have here, like, menstrual products should be free, especially in public places. So in order for that to happen, again, making this change, do you think it's, again, just this conversation or talking to companies and saying like, hey, I don't know if you guys know like AmpFlow. Mm-hmm. And like mm-hmm. she, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong that's listening. I swear she's from Columbus. I'm pretty sure she's from Columbus. Mm-hmm. But her stuff is in a bunch of public places now because they're trying to mm-hmm. spread this awareness of like period products should be free. So do we think mm-hmm. it's talking to institutions and saying here, like you need to add this to your bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what
I
we
don't
do?
Think it's not one thing. It's all of the things. So the conversation should be such that people are armed with more knowledge when they're done with it so that they can act in whatever way they have access to. Now, here's one way that we all have access to, at least to the extent possible, lobbying elected officials.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we get really excited every 4 years. Mine is better than yours. And, you know, and then we, you know, argue at the voting booth or sometimes outside of the voting booth.
Yeah.
And then we go back to our respective corners. And there are city councils, there are state level, there's all kinds of ways to lobby an elected official. And we don't, because we think this is a woman's issue.
Mm.
So we think, okay, we're going to have a conversation and ask the local store. It's beyond that. It's really a systemic issue. Once we start looking at it like that, we start to scaffold the ways that we can actually affect change. So in order to lobby an elected official, there's two things that move them, shame and statistics, right? So in 2019, we commissioned the very first of its kind study on period poverty in the U.S., right? That had not really been done before. We surveyed 1,000 U.S. teens who menstruate from ages 13 to 19. We focused on young.
Yep.
And 2021 study found period poverty, inability to access products. It jumped to nearly a quarter of all students.
Wow.
It was 1 to 5 in 2019. It's now 1 to 4. We're going in the opposite direction.
Mm.
So the pandemic actually, exacerbated that issue, and it made it more difficult for students, particularly students of color, and in particularly Latinx students, to access menstrual products. Mm. Now, what are the effects of that? There's shame. There's I'm not going to school.
Right.
There's I can't go out. I can't do this. I can't do that. There's a lot of I can't do's that are a result of that.
Mm.
So here's another stat that should raise the hair on your neck. 23% of students struggle to just afford basic products, and 16% of them have chosen to purchase products over food or clothing.
Wow. Yeah, that honestly gave me goosebumps again. It makes me emotional. I'm on my period right now. I'm like extra emotional too. But man, like that, that just breaks my heart that a younger, I mean, I have a daughter, she's turning 1 next month. Okay. And mm-hmm. just to even think of her at age 12, deciding that she can't get lunch because she needs to go buy pads or a tampon.
Right.
Oh, that breaks my heart. You know, like this should not be a thing.
This should not be a thing. And that's the reality. This is happening more often than you run into a left-handed person. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like that is, it's that this should not, and people don't tell you because there's a lot of shame associated with poverty that shouldn't be, speaking of stigmas. So people don't tell you they're in that situation,
right.
But it's to that end, those are the kinds of things that move elected officials.
Yeah.
Where you say, this is what it really looks like because we've done a study.
Data helps, right? Like
data helps.
Research
helps. This is
the
sociologist in me,
yeah.
But yes, it certainly helps. And people should not have to choose between, do I eat or do I menstruate with dignity?
Absolutely.
What a choice.
Yeah.
What a choice. What a choice.
Mm-hmm.
We have a school system as well. And education is first and foremost for a lot of elected officials that teach more about the biology of frogs than they do about the biology of women.
It makes me really upset. I don't like that.
Yeah. And so all that being said, all of those statistics tell a story. And that story is more needs to be done in schools, more needs to be done in daily life. And this is a legal and policy equity issue.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just about, well, that would be nice. You should have a pink shirt. It's not a pink shirt.
Right.
It is a necessity.
Right. Yeah. And honestly, like what... we're kind of saying that speaking about when you just the frog analogy, it's almost like we're saying that speaking about a frog's anatomy is what more clean, more hygienic. Like, I don't even understand. Then talking about the menstruators that are sitting in the classroom's biology, like, come on, that makes, you know, no connection to me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so puberty education is literally women's freedom. It's what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
right now. So the more we mm-hmm. know and the more we have access to, the better we show up in this world. And so I guess kind of like closing out, like, do you have any final thoughts on that? I know we say this affects work, this affects school, this affects,
mm-hmm.
I mean, so many different things. And just curious, like, any final thoughts on that topic?
I think really it's ultimately making the connection between how do you move through the world in a fair way and menstruation, which that connection has not been adequately built, not adequately publicized, which is something that we at Flow organizations that are working on this, this is our raison d'etre to a large degree. Menstruating people with access to period products are just better able to navigate the world.
100%.
You know, I mean, they don't have to worry about their next period. They don't have to worry about if they're going to eat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the simple things like
basic survival.
Basic survival. They should be equipped with not only products, but knowledge. How does this work? What's actually happening here? And then they're better able to take care of their bodies. And that's bodily autonomy. I mean, I think we've had conversations about women's bodily autonomy in good and bad ways for the last year and a half for a variety of reasons, but this has not come up with the same regularity. So with menstrual equity, we all realize our potential, not our menstruating potential, our full potential. I think that's the message I'd like to leave your listeners with. It's not just about periods. That's great. We should know about that. But it's what it signifies, what it says about the society, and what it says about menstruating people's access to not just period products. Period products is a proxy for access to a dignity in life.
Again, crazy to think that I've been in the space of hormones and women's health, but it's just now hitting hard how these seemingly small things have such an impact on the way we show up and the way we make decisions in the world. So you mentioned a little bit, but how is Thinks really making this impact? And I also want to know, like, how can we support period equity with your products, with your initiatives? I have my first pair. Like I said, I tried a couple months ago. Really excited to keep. I want to order one for every day of my cycle, to be honest. So I have like one and I want four or five, which in the long run is a great way to save money. Because if you think about how many different period products you buy every month, like might as well buy four or five period underwear and just have them. But going back to the original question, how are you guys really making an impact here and what can we do to support you?
A couple of things. Well, our impact, we believe, is twofold. First and foremost, sustainability. How many pads and how many tampons are thrown away? That's out the window. And there's an environmental equity issue as well. We won't go down that road. That's for another podcast. But our planet's in real danger. And this is our contribution to reversing that. We really believe, I mean, I think it's something like, I think 7 billion tampons are thrown out a year.
Oh, wow.
It's a huge amount. And 88% of those have an applicator. So that's, you know, that's, so it's almost for every tampon you use, there's twofold.
Well, and I'm guilty because I use the applicator ones all the time. You know, it's like, I try the ones that don't have it and I just don't like that as much. But man, like there is that extra extended waste for everyone you use.
Right. So here's the impact of that little extra. It takes 500 years for a single use plastic tampon applicator to decompose.
How many again? Say that one more time.
500.
Oh my gosh. I was like, I did hear that correctly. 500 years.
You heard me correctly.
For
you
one? Correctly. For one.
For one. Oh for my. A single use plastic tampon applicator. So we're contributing to reversing that effort. So by purchasing sustainable menstrual products, that's one way that you can help. Another way is at the recent launch of Thinks for All at Walmart, we're donating sustainable period products to Arkansas Women's Outreach and several other women's organizations in Walmart communities to help those that are experiencing period poverty, right? And we want to make sure, to the extent that I said everything else before, that they have access to comfortable, effective, and sustainable menstrual solutions. So that's part of our ongoing mission. And we continue to partner with nonprofit and social impact organizations to distribute to communities in need with organizations that already have a foothold in those communities. So that's something that we actively do, and that's something that I'm actively pushing in the organization. And Thinks for All is a mass market line. It's for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not, well, if you, you know, it's not like a certain type of makeup or certain type of clothes. There's no quote unquote buyer persona for this. The persona is demenstruate, period. Mm-hmm. Like we're very simple. So our goal is just to provide something that's quality and affordable at a lower price point. So it's not a luxury product.
Right.
It's not a niche product. It's not a, oh, I live in New York or I live in Atlanta product. It's literally for everybody. And we want it to be just as normal and just as frequent use as anything else, as opposed to, you know, where we are now, where people are starting to get the hang of it. But, you know, still to a large degree, there is like, oh, I don't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. And so we're really actively trying to not just break the stigma for our own psychological health, but for the health of the planet and the health of each individual person to determine their own destiny. So those are the ways that we're really actively engaged in dismantling this inequality.
Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful for your guys' company and for your products. And, you know, we didn't touch on this at all. So just really quickly before we wrap up, what can you expect from using period underwear? Like, can you share from your own personal experience? Like, I'm sure that there are some questions on using them in general that somebody listening, they're like, well, I've never tried one, or maybe I have some fears about it. So can you just briefly describe what an experience wearing some period underwear looks like, feels like?
Yeah, it feels like wearing underwear.
Exactly.
It really is that simple. And so it's not that complicated. I think there's a whole bunch of mystery and aura behind it, yeah. But it really isn't that. You know, if you like boy shorts, we got those. Yep. You like high cut, we got those. You know, whatever your usual underwear regimen is, it's exactly that. And you just are mindful that you have to wash them.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. So, and it's super easy. I will say, this weird, like, okay, so what am I going to do with it? I remember, and it's like I ran it under some cold water and I just threw it in with the rest of my laundry. And it was like, boom, done. Mm-hmm. So easy. And now I'm obsessed.
You just put it in. Yeah. Most people I know, and this is not scientific at all, they put it in the sink. They wash it out.
Right.
Some people soak it, some don't. I mean, it depends on whatever, you know, someone wants to do. And then they wash them and they go about their day.
Same,
like,
yeah.
It's really... It is so simple.
I'm not soaking them. I'm like rinsing it really quick and then putting it in the laundry. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, done.
Yeah. But it depends. I mean, some people don't have laundry in their house. You know, there's
uneven,
you know, there's all different reasons why people do what they do. But in all of these cases, it works. And I think particularly during the pandemic, the need for it became very, very clear. And a lot of people tried it that hadn't before because they were home.
Yeah. Right, I have, you know, the time to experience and experiment
I could see how this is going to work or not work, and they were pleasantly surprised. So it should just be really normal. Like, I mean, if you can wear a bandage after, you know, a huge gash on your leg or something and expect that to work, then this is actually, you know, it should be that common where you just reach for it. Like you reach for a Band-Aid or you reach for lipstick or you reach for paper towels. And eventually with time it will be, but to assure and assuage your listeners, there's nothing mysterious about it. You just wear it like you wear panties. And then when you're done, you're done. You wash them out and you keep it moving. It is not supposed to disrupt your day. Ceremony that needs to happen.
I mean, unless you want to do like a menstrual ceremony, I'm all about it.
That's fine. I'm not one of those people, but that's fine. You know, but to that end, it's really not that complicated.
Yeah.
It's a pair of panties that does the job of the products that you used before that are damaging the earth.
Mm-hmm. And I will add this too, for anyone listening, I don't like pads personally. And so I was kind of like, I don't really want to feel my period so much. That was kind of a thing, like uncomfortable. And I did not have that experience at all. I found them very, very comfortable, very dry, like nothing that I had made up in my head about using them for whatever reason, which is why I got so intrigued about them and your company and your mission and having you on the podcast today. So you know, thank you so much for just having this conversation. It's so much more than just period panties, right? There's a whole big picture here that needs to be addressed. And so I just thank you for sharing this. And I can't wait for my listeners to check out Thinks, check out all of the cool things you're doing and get some period panties.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. And to all of your listeners, thank you for listening.
Thank you all so much for tuning into that episode with Dr. Trisha. I cannot wait for you guys to learn more and access these period products here at Thinks. I have linked to all of them within the show notes. I've also linked to some of the specific resources and studies that we talked about and places where you can take action on supporting period equity. And please, if you have any interest in working to support the environment and these issues that we talked about, purchase a pair of period panties. I love mine. I cannot say enough good things. I use them every month now, and I look forward to it as opposed to tampons and pads, which just were not doing it for me, let's be honest. So thank you so much for tuning. Sorry. Let's take that part out right there. Okay. So again, thank you so much for tuning in and for your support. And I cannot wait to talk to you next week with a new guest. This see you soon.